Las Vegas Raiders football.
This is the front for the silver and black. The starter's out there as Locke's looking left out of the shotgun. Pressure on him, throws it out to the corner. Intercepted by the Raiders. Looking right the whole way to Lobby. Lobby gets it to the corner of the end zone. Touchdown, Las Vegas Raiders. Dylan Lobby. Cam's looking right. Pump fakes. It's going to go deep down the sideline. That'll be a touchdown. Cedric Jackson for the Las Vegas Raiders. Cam came through, looked off the coverage, hit him coming down the sideline. Pacino in the shotgun, looking left and then back right to Dante to a corner fade. He catches it as the end. Touchdown, Las Vegas Raiders. Dante Thornton right on the back shoulder, and the Raiders are on the board.
Here's your host, JT the Brick.
All right, JT, hour number two of the show, and it's a big one. My Super Bowl pick coming up now. My Super Bowl pick is on its way. We're brought to you by La Casa Cigars and Lounge at Tivoli Village. What a job by Mike. Wow. What a masterpiece over at Tivoli Village as he moved right next door because he wanted something bigger and grander that has a bigger outdoor patio to smoke, outside, live music, the VIP room if you become a member. I got a locker there. I got a locker over there. I got a cigar locker. Man, how cool is life to have a cigar locker? Mike's done an amazing job. We'll be there for the super grand opening when he announces that. We're going to do a remote coming up here in a little bit, date pending. But they got the walk-in humidor. The lounge features local entertainment 7 nights a week. Not many guys do that in this town. Not many people have a business that has live music 7 nights a week. Mike does. So stay tuned for all the details on the new grand opening. Go to LaCasaCigars.com, and they're big on Instagram. All right, every year I give you my Super Bowl pick today. I take pride in it. It's hard to pick the winner of the Super Bowl because there's 32 teams and only one wins. So even if you pick the matchup, you might pick the game wrong. So I've done this over the years, and I've gotten a few right. I got a Brady one right. I got Russell Wilson and the Seahawks right once. I got Peyton Manning in Denver right one year. But you know, last year I picked Detroit to win the Super Bowl, and I was off. I thought they were going to win. So without further ado, here's my Super Bowl pick for the year with an asterisk. I don't pick the Raiders. As an employee, I don't pick the Raiders to miss the playoffs or make the playoffs. If you can't handle that, tune out. That's what I do. Okay, even though I think the Raiders are going to have a really good year. So I'm not picking the Raiders, so deal with it. You can maybe figure out what I'm thinking, but that's what I do. And I don't gamble, so I'm just giving you my hedge here on what's going to happen. I'll start in the AFC. Buffalo wins the East, and they run away with it. They win by multiple games, 3 or 4 games. In the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens win the North. In the South, the Tennessee Titans will go from last, not to first, but the Houston Texans will have a much tougher battle with the Jaguars, but they'll win. Remember, the Raiders play at Houston this year. And in the AFC West, I have Kansas City winning the division again. I can't pick against Kansas City until we beat them, until someone else beats them. What do you think, I'm nuts? What, you think I'm crazy? Let's beat Kansas City, and then the following year I can start saying they're not going to win the division. My wild card teams in the AFC, wild card, you get three. I'm going to go with two out of the North. I have the Cincinnati Bengals as a wild card, and Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why? Because Mike Tomlin goes to the playoffs every year, and he's got Aaron Rodgers. So I think he's going to go to the playoffs. And my final wild card team, unfortunately, is the Denver Broncos. Because the Broncos are good, and I'm picking them over the Chargers. I think the Broncos are better than the Chargers. So that's what I have on the AFC. In the NFC, I have the world champion Eagles winning the East. In the North, I have the Detroit Lions winning the NFC North. In the NFC South, it's all Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers win the South. And in the NFC West, they're back. The 49ers go from last to first because of their cupcake schedule, which is the easiest I've seen in Niner history. And I think they're pretty good, even though they have a lot of flaws, as I tweeted out today. My NFC wildcard teams, the three, are the Washington Commanders, the Green Bay Packers, and the LA Rams. Those are my three wild card teams. I now take you to the Final Four. In the NFC, I have the world champion Philadelphia Eagles hosting the Green Bay Packers in the NFC championship game. In the AFC championship game, I have the Buffalo Bills hosting the Baltimore Ravens in the last ever game played at Rich Stadium before they move across the street. In the AFC championship game, I have the Buffalo Bills beating the Baltimore Ravens. In the NFC championship game, this is my upset special. The Green Bay Packers advance to the Super Bowl with Micah Parsons and Jordan Love by beating those dirty, stinking, green, drunk birds of Philadelphia. And in Super Bowl 60 in Santa Clara, California, not San Francisco. They'll clean up San Francisco for the week. They'll spray wash it and clean it up for the week. But the game is in Santa Clara, which is nowhere near San Francisco. You almost have to take a plane to get to Santa Clara. The Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl over the Green Bay Packers. Let's go Buffalo. Now, I want the Raiders to win the Super Bowl wearing a Raiders shirt. The Buffalo Bills win their world championship. That's my Super Bowl pick. Brought to you by Virgin Hotels Las Vegas. Cliff Atkinson, what a job he's doing around the clock. Get to the theater, one of the best concert spots in the world. J.O.D. at the bar over at One Steak, man. He'll give you a meal of your life, and you'll love that. So that's my Super Bowl pick. I would love Buffalo or Detroit to win the Super Bowl so their fans can have one. And I think Buffalo will do it. Last year, I picked Detroit over Buffalo. This year, I go Buffalo over the Green Bay Packers. All right, we'll say goodbye to the Bricklayers. Appreciate them being there. If you want to listen, you can listen on our feed. Just go to the Raiders mobile app or stay right here on 920 or LV Sports Network. Vinny Bonsignor and Tom Curran will join us. That's pretty good. No nighttime radio tonight, but I am debuting the podcast with Rod Woodson, which I'll be able to tell you tomorrow after we do it tonight. Really excited about that.
Yeah, it feels great to be preparing, you know, for a game week. You know, I think we've done a great job, you know, in handling what's in front of us. And today's no different, man. We got a practice coming up. Looking forward to getting better at practice and taking it day by day.
JT back with you as we continue on Raider Nation Radio, the flagship of the Silver and Black, brought to you by Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love, the buttery Texas toast, the coleslaw, the jugs of lemonade. Raising Cane's, proud partner of football as they take on UCLA, as I bring in Vinny Bonsignor, who has a connection now, a family connection to UNLV football. Vinny, we want him to win every game.
Yeah, no question. And proud father of my son, Noah, who works for the UNLV football team on the video side of things. I had to pick him up from the facility around 4 a.m. on Saturday morning. Wow. After the big win. Yeah, over at over against Sam Houston State in Houston. So he's loving it and hoping for good things against UCLA on Saturday. Obviously, I'll be in Providence, Rhode Island at my hotel trying to stay up late enough to be able to watch that whole game. But really rooting for UNLV and hoping for good things on Saturday and the rest of the season.
Yeah, so are we. One thing on UNLV, they should have lost that first game. They did everything to lose that game, and we're fortunate to win it, which we're thrilled about because every team, Arch Manning now, and especially some of the other teams that lost, all wish they had a 2-0 record. And UCLA, wow, did they struggle. I got UCLA friends close to the program saying that was the worst defensive appearance they've had in 20 years. They were that bad, and you know they'll be ready to save their season at Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah, no question about it. And Utah's always a good team. That's a handful to start the season off with. But I would expect that the Bruins are going to give their best foot forward. Like you said, they got to salvage their season. It's now or never for UCLA without question. But I think UCLA or UNLV is going to be obviously ready to go in this game. They've got two games under their belt. you mentioned the Idaho State game, which made what they did against Sam Houston State, going on the road and playing a relatively clean game and taking care of business. That was a great next game after the struggle to start the season. And you just hope that you know, they've got all the, they've ironed out all the wrinkles and are ready to go against, a UCLA team coming into Allegiant Stadium. This is arguably one of the biggest games in UNLV recent history, at the very least. And they could make a real bold statement nationally if they could take care of business on Saturday.
Vinny Bonsignore joins us. So the three things the Raiders have to do that you wrote about to win, not only at the Patriots, but to turn this season around and have a really good winning year.
Yeah, and you know, you hate to be cliched about it, but considering how bad the Raiders were in these three areas, or at least very bad in two of the areas, and definitely need to get better in a third, but it does come down to this. In football, it comes down to some core principle things, and the Raiders were bad at it last year, and if they can get good at it this year, they're going to give themselves a real chance because they've got the talent, I think, to compete, especially offensively. But when you look at winning the turnover battle, you know, they were minus 16 last year, 29 turnovers. They only took it away 13 times. You cannot win football games with that, you know, kind of a disparity. And 12 of the 14 teams that made it to the playoffs last year were in the top 13 in that category. There was only one team that finished on the wrong side of that statistic and made the playoffs, and that was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Almost everybody else was on the plus side, and in a lot of cases in double digit fashion. So the Raiders have got to be able to start taking care of the ball better and then taking it away defensively. And then they got to win the red zone. They were in the mid 20s defensively, giving up touchdowns at a 58%, percentage rate. And then conversely, they were 26th in the NFL in touchdown conversion rate when they got into the red zone. Again, the good teams take care of business in the red zone, both offensively and defensively. The Raiders need to do better in that area, and they need to get more pressure on the quarterback. And, they were 38th last year, or excuse me, they had 38 sacks last year. It wasn't the worst number in the league, but they have to do better creating pressure and creating heat. And one of the reasons for that is because this is a young secondary, especially at that cornerback position. One of the ways that the Raiders can really support those young cornerbacks until they get, really up and running and get the confidence level and, turn into the players that I think Pete Carroll and John Spytek believe they can be, is by getting pass rush and getting pressure on the quarterback and making life difficult for the quarterback so that it helps life in the secondary.
So why didn't the Raiders go out and get more cornerback help as you did your deep dive into personnel, the cap, John Spytek, what Pete Carroll likes and the look of it? Caillou Kelly and Darian Porter, when I looked at it, I thought Porter would probably solidify himself as the starter. Caillou's earning more reps here opposite of Stokes. But were you surprised, or were there just not corners available because so many teams covet them and leave them on their roster?
Yeah, well, what's interesting about Pete Carroll is that this is how he does it. He never, his track record in Seattle was he didn't spend big money on cornerbacks, especially, on the free agent market. And really, in terms of investing draft picks, he had gone a long time before drafting a cornerback as high as the third round. From when he started in Seattle until 2017, when he invested the 90th pick overall in Shaq Griffin, that was the highest cornerback he drafted. And then Devin Weatherspoon was number five just a couple of years ago. But typically, throughout his history in Seattle, and he built some pretty darn good cornerback rooms in Seattle, you're talking about the fourth, fifth, sixth round, undrafted free agents, guys like that. He just has a knack for identifying talent, and I think he counts on his ability and his coaching staff's ability to develop that talent. He looks for size, he looks for length, he looks for speed, he looks for tenaciousness. And when you look at the Raider cornerbacks this year, while they obviously lack name factor because they just haven't been out there to do it enough. When you're talking about a rookie in Darian Porter, a second year guy in DeCamion Richardson, a young kid in Caillou Blue Kelly. Yes, the names don't pop, but this is pretty typical of what Pete Carroll does. And he usually has great success doing it. So that's what they're banking on, that's going to be his history is going to repeat itself.
It's a long summer. There's a lot of OTAs and then a long camp and preseason games. Put a bow on the offensive line for us if you can on what Jackson Powers Johnson went through physically and mentally, because when he met Ashton, he said, I'm your center. He's not the center. He got beat out at that position, but I understand why, and he moves to right guard, and that wasn't a lock until recently. I don't know him well enough, and we both interviewed him. What does this do for him? Does this bring out the angry beast in him where he could be a ferocious guard and be a perennial Pro Bowler a few years from now?
Yeah, and if I'm his agent, I'm telling him, you do know that guards get paid higher than centers, right? Yeah, so you got that going for you. So go do your job at guard. Be the best that you can be at that position and go make yourself a lot of money and have a great career. He wouldn't be the first would-be or was center to turn out to be a great, NFL guard potentially. There's a lot of track record and history for that exact position switch and then somebody just going on to have a fabulous career. So this isn't really personal toward Jackson Powers Johnson. What it is kind of an acknowledgement of Jordan Meredith, who's also a really good offensive lineman. And with this staff, they've just believed that the Raiders' offensive line is better with Jordan Meredith at center rather than guard, and the belief that Jordan Meredith can play both positions but can be really good and maybe a better guard than Jordan Meredith can be. So that's what the decision comes down to. It really wasn't anything personal to Jackson Powers Johnson. Did he want to play center? Probably. Did it look, were the optics great for him? Probably not outwardly, but in the building, they just feel like this is the best group of five that they could put on the field with Jordan Meredith at center. And that's not a slight against Jackson Powers Johnson. He'll go do his thing. Jordan will do his. And the key to the whole thing is for this group of five to really hit the ground running in New England and throughout the season, because for Ashton Jeanty to do what he needs to do or can do and is capable of doing, and for Geno Smith to take advantage of all these great weapons that the Raiders have put together, the offensive line needs to do its job. So the Raiders hope that they have figured out that best five-man group, and they're going to be able to move together successfully as a unit.
Vinny Bonsignor is our guest. I've been so disappointed at the defensive tackle drafting and rotation before John Spytek. How many times did a draft pick come in, gone? Not here, gone. And the rotation has been crazy. That's why I love Christian Wilkins when they went out and got him. It was expensive, but I knew they got a Pro Bowler. A guy who's been a Pro Bowler, and he's in the prime of his career. Yeah, it cost a lot of money, and it didn't work out. But I liked the move at the time. I like the depth now because I'm assuming Tyree Wilson's going to be in on third down and Adam Butler's going to stay on the field a lot. So the guys that are getting rotated in are only going to be in there for a few snaps unless they pop and play well and prove they should get more. And I think Robbie Leonard's going to use that as a motivational factor to get those guys to play. If you're only getting 11 snaps a game or 9 or 12, you're going to want them to be the best snaps of your life as a professional football player. How do you see that rotation?
Yeah, and obviously it's got to come together on the field. But the Raiders did they do believe that they have the makings of a pretty deep rotation. And when you're talking specifically at that defensive tackle position, you got Adam Butler, Thomas Booker is the starter on the depth chart. You got Jonah Laulu, who brings what he does to the table. You got Leke Fotu, who makes a difference when he's out there. That was pretty noticeable. He had missed some practice, remember, for a couple of weeks. And then when he got on the field toward the end of training camp, you could visually see, okay, you see what he brings to the table and why he's so important to this, especially in run support. Tonka Hemingway really finished the preseason and training camp on with a strong push. I would imagine that I would expect him to get reps early in his career. J.J. Bekees is more of that development guy who can work his way onto the field. But you bring up a great point about Tyree Wilson. He played a lot inside during the preseason and training camp. And I think that's another case of the Raiders when it's those known passing downs, trying to get their best pass rushers out on the field, your Max Crosby's, your Tyree Wilson, your Malcolm Kuntz's, and whether it's Booker or Adam Butler at that other defensive tackle position, trying to get the best group of pass rushers in those types of situations. So I think they feel like there's a lot of different flavors of ice cream on this defensive line, and now it's Robbie Leonard and Pete Carroll and Patrick Graham's task to put it together so that in this rotation, you're getting the best version of whatever that rotation might be for that particular play to fit that particular situation.
So good with Vinny Bonsignore as we wrap it up. So give me a scenario where it's second and five or third and long with the three linebackers, Jamal Adams, obviously Jeremy Chinn, what we're going to see with a slot corner. Who do you see coming off the field and coming on? It's a pretty deep question on, not specifically, but give me something that could look different where there's two linebackers instead of three, there's an extra safety or an extra corner, which Patrick Graham and Pete Carroll have been cooking in the lab, and that could look really good.
Yeah, I think, you know, based on what we saw, you're going to see Jeremy Chinn come down from his safety position to more of a box, kind of a almost that slot cornerback position. You see Jamal Adams come on the field, sometimes alongside of Devin White, sometimes, you know, in lieu of Devin White. But whether it's White and Adams, mm-hmm. Along with Jeremy Chinn, all of a sudden now you have a front four that could rush the passer, but also two linebackers that could rush the passer in Jamal Adams and Devin White. And I would keep my eye on Jamal Adams. You know, obviously the Raiders are going to be real cognizant of how much they push him. You know, this is a guy that has dealt with some injury issues, you know, the last couple of years. But if he can stay healthy and if they can keep him energized and manage the reps, to me, he could be a difference maker based on what we saw in training camp and in during games. This is a guy that was flying all over the field, and it's usually moving forward, and it's usually right at the quarterback or you know, when he's you know, taken off toward the line of scrimmage in run support, making a difference in that area too. But Devin White as well in terms of the pass rush. So you know, when we think of the pass rush, we think of just the defensive line, but you're going to see cornerback blitzes. You're going to see the two linebackers, Devin White and Jamal Adams, you know, making their presence felt. We saw corner blitzes with Darnay Holmes coming in from the slot. I'm sure Jeremy Chinn will be doing the same thing from time to time. So there's a lot of mixing and matching, a lot of creativity in what they're going to try to do to get pressure on the quarterback.
Well, I know the Raiders have a big executive trip going to Boston. I know people stay in Providence because it's closer to Foxborough, a little secret. It's much closer if you got to get there and do work like you do. So it's a good place to be, especially this time of year, last one. I'm excited. The Raiders play their first two road games in cold weather cities that'll be warm weather. I think that's important. These games, if they showed up at the end of November and December, look completely different to me. The Raiders get a break on the weather. Hopefully that leads to Geno, you know, having a dry ball and playing well, and the Raiders throwing that deep ball.
Yeah, I think that's going to be something that the Raiders want to do, you know, whether it's a lot or often or significantly. So they're going to take their chances downfield. And it's not so much chances, because I think they feel like they have an accurate enough quarterback and wide receivers that can make it happen on their end of it. So it's less chances, more opportunities, you know, and pushing the envelope downfield. I think Al Davis and obviously his son Mark Davis are going to be really happy about that kind of returning to the fold, because that's what the Raiders have always been about. But then when you think about how that opens up things for the Brock Bowers and the Jacoby Myers and also Ashton Jeanty, and it works in reverse order, his running is going to help that long game and everything else in the passing game. So, you know, you start looking at this Raiders offense and you start looking at Geno Smith, you mentioned, you know, playing some cold weather cities in warmer climates, you know, because the calendar worked out for them. Although that Philadelphia game in mid-December, that's going to be one to keep an eye on. And if the Raiders are playing for something at that point, they're just going to have to manage that cold weather situation. But it does help that they're playing Washington and New England this early in the season. And I think that is conducive to Geno Smith and all the weapons that this Raiders offense has. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out just this Sunday for a game one season opener and where this offense is, because I think this is going to be the strength of the team.
Thanks, Vinny. Thank all your sponsors for us if you can.
Yep, absolutely. Loca Loca Tequila, Sal's Mexican Restaurant, and then also the Lending Store. If you need money fast, LendingStore.com have their experts help you find you know, a lender that could get you $500 to $5,000 into your bank account as early as tomorrow.
Safe travels, Vinny. Talk to you soon.
All right, you too. Thank you.
There's Vinny Bonsignore. We appreciate him joining us Fantastic. That's a deep dive. That's why we have Vinny on every week, along with our insiders. You get that here, wherever you're listening, on YouTube, if you're watching, on the Raiders mobile app, and on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Raider Nation Radio brought to you by our great friends, Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka, one of the great American success stories. Tito's is made from corn, naturally gluten-free. Tito's Handmade Vodka makes the good stuff for good times. Tito'sVodka.com, distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc. Austin, Texas, 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly. More on the Raiders at the Patriots. Patriot Week on the flagship of the Silver and Black.
Yeah, well, they need to lean on the guys around them and don't think that they're the whole show. And all I've ever asked of our guys is to be the best they can be, you know. And so there's that pressure. It doesn't have to do with outside expectations and all that. And I think that allows them to be more calm and more composed and more focused in the moments. That's what, you know, we're trying to get done with everybody on the football team. But for the young guys, it's really important, too.
That's Pete Carroll. He had a press conference today. My conversation with him, which we were planning on airing today until we found out he's speaking, we'll air that tomorrow. So I had my first sit-down with Pete Carroll. He walked into the room. Will Kiss, head of our media relations, brought him in, and we sat down one-on-one. And we did a really good 10 minutes, which was all him. So I really had a nice conversation with the coach and looking forward to building that relationship with him in the studio. And there'll be some interviews where the Raiders don't win. We'll ask him directly, why not? Like I've done with Josh McDaniels, Antonio Pierce, John Gruden, and all. I'm not going to ask him, will you quit? No. I have a high road that we deal with professionally with coaches, and we'll handle it the way we do it. And hopefully everybody appreciates the work we do, because the first conversation was really good. As you know, Tom Curran is one of the best media guys, period, in all of Boston. He's just fantastic. He has big media platforms. I was on his podcast earlier today. He's a Patriot insider from NBC Sports in Boston. And Tom, good to talk to you, man. I really enjoyed being on your platform today. That was a lot of fun doing a deep dive on the game.
I got to see if I can match your energy and information level. Holy crap, that was great. People have all they need to know about this matchup from a Raiders perspective now. So thanks, JT.
Appreciate it, Tom. And there's some interesting news on the health of the Patriots coming into the game. I know you're at Foxborough. What's the update?
Yeah, Christian Gonzalez, the Patriots' second-team All-Pro corner from last year. He left practice July 28th with what appeared to be just a little bit of a slightly pulled hamstring. He still hasn't practiced, and that has been a subject of some consternation here. He did not practice again today. We'll get the injury report soon. But as of this point, it would seem put it this way, it's an uphill climb for him to play on Sunday, having not taken part in a full contact practice yet in 2025. So that's
– ooh, I think we lost him there on his end. That's not on us, so – something happened, and we'll get him back up here. But as he just reported, and this is big news here in the Raider Nation, that Christian Gonzalez looks like he's not going to be able to go. So, Tom, he's a really good player overall. Raiders were looking at drafting him a few years back. That would be a big loss.
Oh, it would, yeah. And, you know, their secondary is kind of revamped because they have two safeties back there who have been their starters, Jabril Peppers and Kyle Duggar, and neither of them are – you know, Peppers released earlier this week. Kyle Duggar is now basically running third team. So you're going to have new safeties in Jalen Hawkins and maybe the rookie Craig Woodson. Del Pettis is another guy who's back there as well. So kind of a revamped safety group along with missing your number one corner. That's a situation that the Patriots are going to have to be somewhat concerned about.
Tom Curran's our guest. So what's the strength of the Patriots coming into the season?
It's really in defensive front personnel right now, JT. You have Harold Landry, who's a good player. Patriots made him a captain, actually, earlier this week. They signed Milton Williams, big-ticket free agent. Christian Barmore missed most of last year with a health issue, but he's back, and he is a big-ticket item himself. And then they have a kid, Kalavon Chaisson, who has really played well for them and earned one of the edge positions along with Keon White. So those four right there are a strength for the Patriots right now. And as you guys know, Robert Spillane, a very good second-level player too. So that is seen as their strength. Also, I think one of the strengths, to be honest, is Josh McDaniels being here as the offensive coordinator. We just talked about it with Drake May a few minutes ago. And as we discussed earlier, you know, the Patriots have seen Charles' defenses a number of times over the years. And in seeing them, Josh has always done a really good job of operating against that defense and finding the running back. So Travion Henderson is a running back that does fit the mold of some of the guys who have done a terrific job against that defense. So Drake May does have a little bit of a cheat sheet with Josh McDaniels to attack that offense.
Tom Curran's our guest, and what a great insider he is. And you would say the same as we talked about with Patrick Graham, the Raiders defensive coordinator coming from New England in his years there too. So I think Patrick Graham should know a lot of Josh McDaniels, considering Josh McDaniels had him as his defensive coordinator in Vegas.
Yeah, and that's – I asked Vrabel about that today, and he said, we can't get into the weeds too much with what are they going to do. We want to be prepared for this if they do that, so let's plan ahead and presume that they might switch this because we're accustomed to that. You know, you just have to run your stuff, and if they do something unexpected, is what Vrabel said, you have to adjust to it then.
Tom Curran joins us. You're a big fan of Jakobi Meyers. Tell our audience about Jakobi, and we talked about the fact that, look, he wants a new contract. He had 1,000-plus yards with not a drop, only receiver in football to do that. I don't know when the last receiver who could ever do that, and he was a fan favorite in New England.
He was a fan favorite. Unfortunately, Bill Belichick always had a tendency to, when he unearthed players and made something of them, he would frequently find it hard to reward those players with the contracts that you would presume that they would get based upon their production. So the Patriots and Jakobi Meyers divorced over about $1 million.
Oh.
Jakobi didn't want to go anywhere. Jakobi was happy here. Jakobi, you know, had made his bones here. But the Patriots moved on from him, and it's to the Raiders' benefit. And the Patriots, you know, I remember talking to Devin McCourty when the move was made. He goes, why would they do that? You have one guy who's done everything exactly how you want in terms of coming from, you know, undrafted, right? Yes, undrafted, not a seventh rounder. We've had so many seventh round guys here who turn into something. But undrafted player to climb the depth chart, become a productive player, do everything the right way, wouldn't say poop if he had a mouthful, and did everything that the Patriots wanted, and then they get hung up because they don't think he's as good as they think he's good because of them, not because of him.
Tom Curran's our guest. So, Tom, you and I did a deep dive on Tom Brady. I think it's fascinating from a New England perspective because, as we talked about, he is now a Raider because he's an owner, a minority owner with a big chunk. So that's his team now because he has ownership in it. It's not like being a broadcaster and a fan or you're the voice of the Giants, then you move to the 49ers. It's completely different. When you have ownership with a team, you want that team to win. But Brady just got a statue at Gillette, and he's an icon.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you know, he can stand there at his retirement ceremony all he wants and say that I'll always be a Patriot. He's not going to be a Patriot from 1 to 4. On Sunday, Eastern time, he is going to be hoping for the silver and black, the pride and poise, the commitment to excellence to be rewarded at 10 a.m. Pacific time when the game kicks off. So to me, it is fascinating. And there's so much overlap when you really think about it. You know, I'm thinking about Pete Carroll and Vrabel today. You know, Pete Carroll's first year, he was 1997 when he was a Patriots head coach. And Mike Vrabel ruined that postseason game that they had in Pittsburgh with a strip sack of Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
You have the overlap between the two franchises with the Snow Bowl and the 1976 roughing the passer game. You have Chip Kelly from OSU and Patrick Graham and Josh McDaniels having been the head coach out there. It just goes on and on.
It's amazing. Tom Curran, as we wrap it up. So, Tom, this is an important game for 2-4-win teams. As I talked about on your show and podcast, the Raiders, I think the Raiders have better star players, but the Raiders don't have a lot of depth. And I think the Patriots probably have a little more depth, but how big of a roster flip was that for New England? A lot of people don't recognize the names. I'm sure they're good players, and there's a connection with Elliott Wolf because Ron Wolf was an architect behind Al Davis and building the Raiders' greatest teams. How optimistic are you of this Patriot roster development going forward?
Fairly optimistic, guarded optimism. How's that? Because they have a depth issue, too. You know, they've done so poorly in the draft, so embarrassingly bad, that they are not stocked at many of their positions. And so many of the guys they're going to rely on, whether it be, you know, Mike Onwenu or Steph Diggs, a lot of these guys aren't going to be here in 3 years. You know, Kyle Duggar won't be here in 3 years. A lot of these guys, they can't really necessarily build around, so they still have to restock their team. I think they have over 40 players who are new on their roster this year, so there is a learning curve that they're going to have to experience. All that talent that I mentioned up front defensively, those four guys have never played together, ever. And you know the best defenses work like a hand in glove and know what the other one's going to do prior to the play beginning. So they don't know that yet. So I would be guardedly optimistic about their future, but understanding, and I don't think a lot of folks in New England are doing that, understanding that it's hard to hit the ground running, even if it's a new head coach and a terrific offensive coordinator and a promising quarterback.
Tom, last one. Belichick got blown out in front of Michael Jordan, Lawrence Taylor, Roy Williams. ESPN went down there like lapdogs, like they did to Deion Sanders for free sunglasses a couple of years before. Even Aaron Boone, who's chasing the Red Sox, was on the sideline, and Belichick laid an egg. I think fans make it too personal with him. Six Super Bowls, eight total. One of the great Mount Rushmore coaches of all time. What type of heat is Belichick still taking in New England?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's universal heat by any stretch, because just as many people who will say, you know, he kind of ran the team into the ground, there's just as many people who say, well, did you like your six Super Bowls? Did you like your 13 AFC championship appearances? Then shut up about it. He's entitled to do whatever he wants. But I just don't think that people down in North Carolina are going to feel the same way, because in Bill We Trust here grew over a period of time. There's been nothing that he has done to earn trust yet in Chapel Hill, so I think their patience is going to be a little less.
Tom, I hope I see you before the Super Bowl, but I know we always hook up every Super Bowl this year. It's in Santa Clara outside San Francisco, and let's touch base during the season. Good to talk to you, my friend.
All right, JT. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Tom Curran, man, that's a big guest. And he was kind of – he was in the middle of a Patriot, just got off the press conference. So breaking news. Maybe the Raiders podcasters will clip this. He doesn't think Christian Gonzalez is going to go. He's second team all pro. And he was just there and asking Vrabel about that. So that's a big break for the Raiders, man. The Raiders don't have a second team all pro corner. We don't. They do. And I remember when Christian Gonzalez was available for the draft, and that was a player a lot of people thought we were going to take. So that's interesting. And he didn't think much of the safeties. Gino, stay after practice with Trey Tucker. Your boy JT the Brick's telling you, throw it deep. You just heard it there. Bobby, do we have a little bit of Ashton Jeanty from earlier today? How about this show today? Man, could someone turn this in for a Marconi Award? What a show today. You would rather listen to Ashton Jeanty than me, correct? So we'll just do a few minutes of the Silver Surfer and what he said.
Ashton, at least to us, you seem like a pretty chill dude. You kind of wear that well. But I got to imagine it's a pretty exciting moment for you. And so how are you feeling on the verge of your first NFL game?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I mean, it's the most important game right now because it's the one we're about to play. But, you know, not going to make it any bigger than it is. You're still playing football. Still doing what we've been doing, but, you know, obviously it's my real debut, so I'm excited.
What is the most feeling? Impressed with in terms of you, through your first camp, now it's here for real? What were you most impressed with how guys acted and how they led you as professionals about that camp?
Yeah, I think just from the standpoint of being a pro, you know, coming here, getting to work, showing us the way, us rookies, you know, what it takes to prep our bodies, you know, mentally prepare in the film room, all those type things. But also helping us, you know, vets in my room like Raheem, you know, helping us with different things, you know, teaching, helping with plays, you know, that I need help with, whether it's protection, whatever it is. Just you can see that at every single position.
How do you see the collective motivation? ¿Cómo ves la emoción y la sensación de todo el equipo colectivamente?
I think, you know, just as a group, I mean, for us is just upholding that standard, you know, each and every single day. Obviously, the run game wasn't the best last year, so, you know, this year we want to take a step forward, but not just in the run game, but I'm sure as a whole offense, we all just want to be better and, you know, be great.
How do you not allow this to get too big for you and just realize it's another football game, even though it's your first professional game?
Prepare like I have before. Obviously, you know, in the NFL, details are a step higher, so I'm taking my details a step higher. And, you know, how I'm preparing for the game, whether that's watching film, you know, making sure I know the playbook, you know, in and out, you know, what I'm going to see on defense. But exactly that, prepare like it was a Super Bowl game or not, prepare the exact same way.
You alluded to the Patriots on tape. You know, obviously, I'm sure it's more personnel-based. What are some of the guys, what stands out to you about the guys up on that front four from them?
Yeah, I mean, they're a great group. I mean, some of the guys are more physical, especially the defensive ends, really setting that edge, using speed, and, you know, great moves. You know, Milton being a more physical guy, you know, disrupting the run and stuff like that. So definitely a good group.
What are you most looking forward to in your first game?
Just going out there with the boys and, you know, playing football. I mean, obviously, you know, I want to make plays for the team, but more than anything, I just want to see us as a group, you know, go out there and dominate.
What did you learn about yourself, your own game, the NFL, during the preseason?
I learned I probably need to make more guys miss, but I just think, you know, the mentality of us, you know, as a team, you know, we're going to play fast. I mean, we're going to play physical and we're going to play smart. And, you know, just continuing to uphold that standard, you know, in the running back room and, you know, let it translate through the whole team.
Is that something that people have had to remind you of, like, you don't have to run everybody over?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of take it as a joke because I feel like, you know, me as a player, I've been a pretty physical player. And, you know, the scenarios I was put in, like, you know, I kind of had to. But, yeah, obviously you want to pick and choose your battles. You know, the season is long, and I want to be available, you know, throughout the whole season.
Which one of your teammates has helped you out the most so far?
The most? I mean, I'd say Raheem, honestly. Just him, obviously, being a running back in the room. Older guy who's, you know, been doing it for a long time. And not just from a football perspective, but, you know, just even different things off the field he's helped me with as well.
What's the biggest piece of advice he's given you?
He's given a lot, but I'd say for sure it's like taking care of your body. He stressed that to me a lot of times. Take care of your body because it's a long season and, you know, I want to play for a long time.
Kind of open that question up and talk about holding that standard for the running back room, not just Raheem, but just the whole room in general. How much of those guys been able to help you and, you know, provide you and the information that you need to really take on this role?
Yeah, I mean, everybody. It's a collective group, you know, whether it's a pass play or a run play, maybe what was the footwork on this, you know, what's the route on this, you know, just collectively as a group, you know, we're helping each other. To where we're a unit. We want to see everybody win, you know. Whoever's out there, it should be no drop off.
You mentioned, you know, you don't have to try to run over every guy, and especially when you have the shiftiness and ability to be elusive, is that something you want to display just as much as the physicality?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I feel that's what makes me special as a player. I can do both. So, you know, hopefully I put that display on Sunday.
All right, Ashton Genty, that was great. So we started with the Pete Carroll press conference, ended with Ashton Genty. We had on Tom Curran, Vinny Bonsignore. That was really good. The calls were brilliant, outstanding, good energy. Great job by Bobby. And we got a good show lined up tomorrow and the day after that. Q's coming up next. He's got a big show lined up. This is big for all of us here on the flagship. We want to win this game. We want to win every one. But you got to get the first one. You got to get the first one and get on a roll. Right, you got to get the first one, and then the second one drops. Next thing you know, you get to 3-1. You can get to 5-2, or it goes the other way. And I don't want to see it go the other way. I want to see them end up winning. So that's where we're going to go from here. I'm leaving here, and we got a meeting with Remy Martin. Remy Martin is back, Team Up for Excellence. How great is that? Remy Martin Cointreau. You can't make a margarita without Cointreau. Whatever the tequila is, you got to have Cointreau. That makes the margarita, so you're going to need that, and they're going to button up some business there. And then tonight, I record my first podcast with Rod Woodson. So Rod's one of the greatest players of all time. He is an encyclopedia of football. Okay, I'm just going to wind him up and let him go. And the goal of that podcast is for Rod to talk. Rod travels with the Ravens. He's the color analyst on the radio. We have Kirk Morrison. They have Rod Woodson for the Ravens. And the Ravens might go to the Super Bowl. So Rod will be traveling. We're going to try to drop a podcast every week on top of everything else I'm doing. And I'm loving it. We got the pregame at 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, which is early, which will be nice. And then after that, we're good. Then we're going to get into the week after that, and we're going to have a longer week because the Raiders are going to host Monday Night Football. Christopher Mad Dog Russo was on First Take today. He showed the Chargers travel. Chargers got screwed. They're traveling to São Paulo, Brazil. Instead of going on a straight line from L.A. to Brazil, they have to fly across America over Boston and then come down that way. It's going to take them 12 hours to get there, 12 hours to go home, and then they have a road game in Vegas. So they're going to have extra time off. Remember, the Chargers play on Friday. They won't play till the following Monday against the Raiders. And they deserve that extra time off because they're traveling to São Paulo, where reports are, the NFL, they don't want you to know that both teams aren't allowed outside their hotel. That's how crazy Brazil is. So they're not like, hey, man, you got to the room? You got 3 hours to go to dinner. Just here's some Ubers. No. So those guys are basically getting on a plane and traveling to go play in a football game to entertain who? There's not many Charger fans. It's TV for the Chiefs. It's for the Swifties. Everything's for the Swifties now. When you have 12 million new followers to the NFL who are Swifties, you got to give them Kansas City content, I guess. We're up on YouTube at JT the Brick, YT. You can follow the show and watch all of it there. And on Instagram at JT the Brick LV. I'm happy I got JT the Brick LV because someone stole JT the Brick and we had to put them under, literally, because of what they were doing. So we have that. And then you can find us on X at JT the Brick. All right. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate everyone here. Thanks to Bobby, who kind of wrangles this all together. And my young son, who's out here helping out a couple of days a week, which is cool. I will be back tomorrow. No night show tonight, which is cool. And we're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow. Stay tuned for Q and Ari. They got a great show lined up. And thanks for listening, everyone. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.